Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and resiliency expert, helping people to think, speak, and act positively through the many and varied challenges of life. You can find out more about me in this interview at my website, which is tall.com. My guest today was recommended to me by the amazing Philip Hatfield, who works for the Ziegler Corporation. Philip and I are co-authoring a book coming up. And so our guest today is James Capra. We'll call him Jimmy after this, but let's call him James Capra professionally. He's currently the CEO and founder of the Frontline Leadership Group, a leadership training and development firm located in Argyle, Texas. He is the author of Leadership at the Frontline, Lessons Learned About Loving, Leading, and Legacy from a Warrior and Public Servant, published by Lulu.com. He is known by his friends and colleagues, Jimmy, as he is known as by his friends and colleagues, retired after 27 and a half years with the Drug Enforcement Administration. Prior to his retirement, Jimmy served as the chief of global operations, responsible for 227 domestic offices and 86 foreign offices in 67 countries. For the past 10 years, Mr. Capra has delivered keynote speeches and world-class leadership training in numerous venues throughout the United States and in selected international regions. He has been called on to speak on national security issues involving international drug trafficking organizations, drug and terror groups, pharmaceutical diversion, and drug legalization issues, just to name a few. In addition, Mr. Capra is recognized expert on leadership and organizational management and has spoken on a wide variety of leadership issues around the United States. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Thanks, Tom. I'm really honored to be on your show. I really am. It's just fantastic to be with you this morning.
Now, the Drug Enforcement Agency, 67 countries, 86 foreign offices, 227 domestic offices. That is a large organization. And you were with them. What were you with them your entire career? You started with them.
I actually started with military service over 30 something years ago. I actually wore three different U.S. military uniforms over the course of 8 or 9 years, and then joined the DEA, was fortunate enough to get picked up and joined the DEA in 1987. It's a great outfit filled with just dynamic men and women, and it was a great, great career, a calling, I tell people all the time, I beg the good Lord to let me have the job. It took us 2 years to get on it, and never looked back once, had a great time. A few, like any of those callings in public service or in, I call it the warrior professions, there were some moments that you don't want to relive and some sad moments that happens because you're battling evil, and that sounds romantic, and it's not. It's true. You're actually trying to put up a standard against organizations and people who have not our best interests in hand. So, but make some tremendous friends who are family and serve with just some of the best and brightest. And I was very blessed and fortunate moving up the ranks in the course of those years and had some great leaders who saw something in me that they kept pushing me. And you wake up one morning and you're running global operations and you're looking back and saying, how did a kid who barely got out of high school, how did he get here? So it's... it was really phenomenal. I just absolutely loved it. You know, my wife, we've been together for 34 years and 6 kids, and I drug them all over the country and sometimes got up in the morning and didn't come home for weeks. But I tell people all the time, she was the heart and is the heart of this family of ours and my biggest supporter and biggest advocate. So When you have issues like that, great issues like that, great, you know, family like that and willing to sacrifice with you, and when you love your job and what you're doing, it's not really a job. It's not like working. It's like you can't believe that you know, they pay you for going to work every day. But
right.
it's just been a great run.
And this is so much, you know, what people talk to me and ask me about. If you really find your purpose in life, something you're passionate about and you love, boy, it just seems unfair to collect a paycheck because you just love it so much and you enjoy it. And then also Napoleon Hill spoke about the mastermind principle, and the number one mastermind group is between a husband and a wife. It was due to the success of Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and many other of the 500 people that he studied. And, yeah, if you're away for weeks on end and you got six kids, you need that support of a wife at home. Otherwise, you might come home and find your suitcases on the lawn
out
or
of the,
something.
Out on the front lawn. But those are the things, you know, we knew when we were dating and talked about those things, so the things that were so important to me personally and professionally, and she supported that. So we knew going into this thing, we knew going into that journey that you know, there'd be challenges and stuff. But again, you know, I don't want to paint a rosy picture. You know, you'd come home for some days and say, okay, we're moving, and you're picking up the family and you're moving, you know, across the country or whatever, or you say, hey, I gotta be gone, and to be honest with you, I think I'll be home in a week or 2 weeks. And she was very patient about it and supportive about it, and so were all my kids too, as they as now reached adulthood. So, but you're right. It is something that I was passionate about. I loved doing. You know, a number of years ago, was talking to a group, and I had done some research, and I was startled to find. I don't know if it was Rand or Gallup, but found out that about 70% of the people that they polled didn't like their job. I read that. I said, this can't be possible. And 70% of the people didn't feel like that this was their job for them. I said, how do you get up in the morning? How do you do that and just go into work? You know, we were, and the guys and gals that I work with every day they were on fire. They had a fire in their belly. Certainly not everybody. You can't, so don't, you know, there's always, you know, a few people that even in those types of jobs, that's not their job for them. That's not their calling. It's not their purpose. But what happens is people get into a position and they go, well, this is it. This is what I'm doing. I'm, you know, the money is good, so I'm going to stick with it. And it just, you know, when your job is, when you love it, when you're passionate about it, when you understand about it, when you know what your purpose is in that moment, in that profession, like I said, it's no longer a job. It's not a job at all. It's has its moments, but and this particular job, serving as a federal narcotics agent, of course it can get a little hairy, but it's a lot of fun, and you meet men and women of like purpose.
Nice. Now let's talk about leadership. That's the focus of your book,
right,
and what you speak about mainly. And so many leaders I see don't actually ever take leadership training. They either have it or they're thrust into it, or they just make it up on their own. So as far as leadership, is there any ideal way to lead or ideal way to learn to be a leader? Because it's so important. Anybody who's worked for a great leader knows how exciting that is and how great it is. And anyone who's worked for a lousy leader knows how sucky that is.
Right. That's true. It is true, and of course, if you go on the internet and Google leadership, there'll be, you know, millions, and facetious, but thousands of people out there telling people how to lead and stuff. And there's a lot of great stuff out there. There's a lot of fluff, and for me and my journey, you know, although like you said earlier, is I get asked to speak a lot about national security issues. My heart is really in talking to men and women, and it's really, I'll tell you, Tom, it's not teaching. Let me just share this with you. It's not about teaching. It's about sharing with men and women, you know, who want to make a difference, about what a leader's walk should look like. Say, okay, Jim, why you? Well, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a family. My father was a New York City police officer, 10th grade education. And very early on, he used to talk about, listen, everybody, no matter where their position on the ladder in life is, no matter what their economic position, everybody deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. I don't care where they come from, what their background, what their color is. And so there's certain principles that I grew up with believing in and knowing that those things are true. Now, on my job, when I was both in the military and then came on DEA, you meet a lot of dynamic, wonderful men and women who are technically competent. That is, they know their jobs. They know they're experts at what they're doing. But what I started seeing when I was fortunate enough to be promoted to the senior executive ranks some years ago, I started noticing this as our young men and women move into leadership positions, some of them start to lose the idea of what that meant. You know, some of them thought, I'm supposed to know everything. I'm supposed to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm supposed to. And so I took the time to start talking to those guys about, hey, listen, it really isn't about knowing everything. You're constantly learning. What you have to, the very foremost thing you have to be willing to do as a leader. You have to be willing to serve, number one. And number two, you have to be willing to fall in love with men and women that you are entrusted to. Now, when you talk, when a guy like me talks about love, they go, wait a minute, isn't this the military guy? Isn't this the narcotics guy?
And is he hugging everybody?
Yeah. Is he hugging people? Is he putting dandelions in people? No, not in the least bit. That when I talk about that love, it's that conscious act of the will to say, I care about the people that you work with. You know, we've heard terms out there. People say, well, our people are assets. And people, listen, I narrow it down. I'm not a list guy, Tom, never have been. I'm not the, you know, here's the five things, here's the seven things. I talk from a position of experience, and I tell, listen, if you're willing and want to go into leadership, you have to understand that you're dealing with people every day. And those people, those men and women, have a purpose, right? They have a purpose in the organization, and they have a purpose in life. So purpose in the organization and a purpose in life. And leaders need to lead them with passion. In other words, with so that people get sparked a fire in their belly. And they need to care about them. They need to. And people say, well, I don't understand. You need to develop trust with your people, and they need to care about them. You need to be concerned about their professional growth and their personal growth. And the big deal is, Tom, not everybody gets it. Not every one of the guys and gals that you have the opportunity to lead will get that, but others will. And I have this phrase I tell my guys, I've told them for years, I said, listen, if you want to make a difference in your organization, a great difference, if you want to leave a good legacy, if you want to make a difference in your leadership walk, you got to learn how to fall in love with people. And that means just what I said, that means caring about these people. It's not hugging people. You know, part of that is, you're accountable to them. They're accountable to you. And part of loving a guy may mean you may have to sit down with them and say, hey, brother, you got to go. I owe it to you. I owe it to this organization. I got to let you go. You know, it's this conscious act of the will. And I say those things because, you know, all the books in the world, mine included, and I wrote my book, Leadership at the Frontline, just from a position, a snapshot of my walk, and shared, you know, my mistakes and it, very, very honest about it. It was great. It was great to write. But I tell people is you're gonna good leaders always pay a price to lead. You pay an emotional price with people. Yeah, you do, but it's in the long run, you know, in the long run it's worth it. So is there a good way to lead? Yeah, I believe there is. I absolutely believe there is. The first thing is to start to understand that the men and women who are entrusted to you have a purpose, both in life and in the organization, and you have to lead with some type of passion. And I don't mean up with people every day. You know what I mean? I don't mean, yay, rah-rah stuff. You know, the missions that our guys do, and when I was on active with DEA, they're a lot of fun, but some of them are incredibly, incredibly dangerous. So there is no, you know, rah-rah up with people stuff. We're serious about our position, serious about the health and welfare of the public that we serve. And at the same time, we want to get the mission done with as little conflict as possible, and we train that way all the time. So I'm not certainly talking about an up with people type of thing. It's serious business that we do, and leadership is a serious business. But it can be fun, mm-hmm. and you can impact men and women's lives. And here's why, Tom. Go look at any book on leadership out there. And I tell people this, where is it, on what page does it tell you how to deal with the death of a child? On what page in a book, in a leadership, does it does it explain to you, okay, how to deal with when one of your guys walks in and says, I've just been diagnosed with cancer, or my wife just left me, or a host of other things that in the daily course of doing life, things happen. And that's what I mean. So you may not be as a leader be able to solve those things, but you can be part of trying to mitigate some of those things. Those men and women, we're with them. I told us, and my wife knows it better than anything else. I'm with men and women that I work with more than my family sometimes. And we talk about work families and stuff. We spend more time with them sometimes than we do our own families. That doesn't mean we care more about them or anything or any less, but it just is. And what we're trying to do is make a difference in their lives. And if you do that, you make a difference in your organization. Those things come when you start caring. People realize, hey, how people care about them. Our leaders care about us. They're excited about us. They know us. But again, not everybody gets it, Tom. Not every employee subordinate will say. Some of them don't want you to know about them. And I tell guys, that's just part of it. That comes with it. It just does. It comes with that walk. And so
I love it.
I get excited about those things because it works. When you do that, when somebody think about your own career, whether you're working in your family business and everything, somebody comes up, hey, how are you? Hey, how are you doing? Or somebody just puts a hand on your shoulder and says, man, that was awesome what you did. It impacts us as human beings. It does. And we're not this sterile group. We come to work, and as a matter of fact, if you read about why people leave the workplace, the number one reason people leave is they'll tell you, I feel this is a sterile workplace. I can't grow here. The boss doesn't care about me. It's all about the profit, or it's all about the mission. It's not money. People say, well, it's got to be money. Money's like sixth or seventh on the list. People want to know that they have a sense of purpose at work, at whatever that is, that people care about, that they value them. And that's what becomes important. So
exactly. I love it. Obviously, it's a topic,
but it's something that's near and dear to my heart.
Exactly. I was going to say, obviously, this is something you are enormously passionate about. I was thinking of three things as you were talking there about one, like a death of a child, wife leaving, the horrible circumstances. You got to love on your people, but at the same time, you got to help them perform at their best on the job, because if they lose their job, or in DEA, if they lose their life, it's not going to help the circumstance anymore. So love on them with the problem, but still help them to perform at their very best on the job. Also, as a leader, you often have to lead people that you don't like. You wouldn't spend time with outside of work. They wouldn't be your friend. But they are crucial, they are good at their job, and you have to lead them anyway. And then the third thing that came to my mind was, do you think there's different leadership styles or leadership tips or leadership practices for people? Like if you're in the DEA or in the Army, it's easy to lead. You yell and you tell, and people don't talk back to you. But if you go and do that in the private sector, people are going to be resisting.
Right.
And so maybe a style in one kind of organization works different in another. And at the same time, if you love your people, that style goes with every organization you're in.
And I think, that's what a lot of people think is because we have a captive audience and they're going to do. But the principles really are the same. When we train young men and women up who want to be investigators, we put them through a very, very intense academy. Well, the military does the same thing, whether it's officer candidate school or basic training, is we put them through a rigor of stress, because we try to get that stress so we can't get it as close as being in a battle will be. You just can't do it. But we want to make sure we introduce them to stress, structure, and training. And in training, what we're trying to do is, hey, listen, if you train the way we're going to fight, when you fight, you're going to fight the way you train. Those things are really critically important. Training is so you want, because part of what we do, both in terms of the military and DEA, is to train our people up to work, operate in a very, very difficult arena where there could be a level of violence can go from 0 to 100 overnight. So they need to be able to operate, train, function, and execute the performance of their duties very, very well. With the paramount duty is making sure that the health and safety of the public is there. So we don't just go in willy-nilly. So in training, a lot of stress goes on there. But when we get these men and women, they come to us, and they come to our units and our groups and our divisions, part of our heart should be, I want this woman to be developed both professionally and personally. So it doesn't do me any good not to care about. Listen, it's important that they grow on both sides. And we have a lot to do with that. When you start realizing those things. And then you get asked, Tom, you said some interesting things earlier about, is one better than the next? I think when you lead, I call it learn to lead from the heart at the front line, because at the front line is where the rubber hits the road. That's where it is. And a front line in any organization can be that basic area where the mission of the organization is getting done, where men and women are working to move the organization in a direction. And if you as a leader's principal concern is going to be the money, the profit, and even in DEA, it's going to be all about the arrests and the seizures. Yeah, you may be able to get a lot of those after a while, but you'll lose something in just pursuing that and not pursuing in developing people. You pursue developing people, your organization's going to grow. You pursue caring about and developing men and women, pursuing excellence. Pursuing that excellence, you tell your people, and I don't buy the whole, okay, everybody's got to be perfect. There's only one guy that was perfect, and he came a couple thousand years ago. But our drive should be for excellence, both for our people then our organization. If our people pursue excellence, if you pour into them, think about a pitcher, and you're pouring into people every day. You're pouring into them. You're talking about things. And when I talk about discipline, people think, no, discipline has to do with training and structure and customer service and all those things to develop great habits, because they represent your organization. And by the way, it doesn't matter, Tom, it doesn't matter if you're a federal agent, you're a soldier, or you work on an assembly line somewhere. The principles remain the same. Do you know what we do? I had a habit of telling my guys, one of the things, people would do is, okay, we got this guy trained, we got him cleared, he's here, he went through an academy, he went through a training, now, we put him on the front line. And you find out that no one's ever continually talked to them about, pursuing excellence. Hey, sitting with them and say, where do you see yourself? Where do you want to go? What's in your heart? And it's amazing, guys and gals will sit there and say, no one's ever talked to me about that. Well, that's important to me, or identifying young leaders and go, man, you have something worthwhile here, and push them. And other people see that within your organization and say, man, this is a great place to work. Anything that Collins has written about, the researchers, you dissect Collins' book left and right, and Collins talks about the difference between good companies and not so good companies are CEOs that give a crap about their men and women. They care about their organization. They care about those people in their organization. And I tell that to people time and time again. And I've heard things like, well, we don't have time for that. No, man, you don't have time not to pour into people. But here's something, Tom. So, and I tell this, it's in my book. So what happens as a leader when you're pouring into people and then you hear something leaking? You hear what I'm saying? You pour it into people and I say, I hear something leaking. I keep pouring into this guy and it's leaking out of his backside. There are men and women like that. Like I said, it's not up with people. Not everybody's going to get it. And you have to deal with people that you're pouring into. And I tell people, I have a simple response to that. Or you're the love. Yeah, if I have a simple, I stop pouring into that guy or gal. If I see that somebody no longer wants to grow professionally or personally, I don't pour into him anymore. I don't have time to. I got all these other great guys and gal. It doesn't mean I hate them or I sit them in a corner and let moss grow on their head. They may be task oriented. It just simply means I've got other people I got to pour into. You see what I mean? It's not this, oh, everybody, we're going to, no, I don't, listen, once I see a pattern begin to develop in somebody that they're not interested in growing, I just don't have time to, I don't have time, and I tell other leaders, you don't have time. Our job is not to fix anybody. See that?
Right.
You know, we think, well, it's a boss, we've got to fix them. No, your job is not, we get men and women who come to our professions, who come into our organizations, and most of all of them are adults. And so they come with, you know, a set of values, character. They see the world through their glasses sometimes. Sometimes it's a generational thing. But your job is not to fix them. Your job is to tell them, here's what we expect of you. This is what you can expect of me. And you have purpose here. And when you get somebody, and you do, you're going to. Organizations have them, regardless of how great the organization is, regardless how much money somebody's getting paid, you're going to get somebody that basically doesn't care about being poured into. And so I tell people, I don't waste my time with those people. I just waste valuable time pouring into those people when I know it's going to leak out of them. So that's what I mean. You pay a price. I mean, you have to be discerning. It is not an up with people. When you're in the arena leading people every day, you're constantly learning. You got to be willing to learn. You're going to be willing to make mistakes. You're going to fall down. You're going to get back up. You're going to keep pursuing excellence no matter what. You got to make mistakes. You got to look somebody in the eye sometimes and say, hey, man, I messed that thing up. Oh, wait, you can't do that. You'll be weak. Get back. Are you crazy? You're nuts. You know, people look at you and say, hey, the boss is a human being. My supervisor is a human being. Now, at the same time, if you're going in and saying sorry every day, something's off. You know, then you start challenging
your
technical competence, you know. So, and it's a hard thing. That's why, Tom, I said leading is a hard thing. It's a hard thing. There are certain principles you got to be tech. I absolutely believe that leaders need to be technically competent in their jobs, in the performance of their duties, you know, whatever that is, whatever you're working, if you're working in, you know, technical outfits or anything else, you should be technically competent. But a lot of times, most guys and gals who, if they're honest with you in organization, say, you know, I'm especially in mine, I've worked with some of the most talented men and women. I go, my gosh, when I was working on the street as a street agent, I wish I could work with you because you could teach me that. So you're going to have people who are smarter than you regarding the technical abilities in the organization. That's a great thing. That's a great thing to leverage those guys and gals. But you know, so it's a walk. It's a constant. You're constantly learning.
Exactly. And what a great lesson and something I've learned as well. I've mentored a number of younger people where after a short period of time, you could tell they weren't interested. They're not going to read the book. They're not going to do the homework you suggest. They're just not going to do it. And when you're positive and in your personal development industry like I am, and you have all these great books and you have these great goals, when you're continually banging your head against a wall, giving of your time to someone who is not going to read the book, not going to put into practice any new habits, man, it's frustrating for the leader, and it's a waste of time, and the sooner you can recognize that, that's maybe one of the keys of leadership is recognize who to pour your time and your effort and your energy into, and recognize who not to, and get away from the not to people quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, Tom, because I said, you know, and it's in my book, in one of the chapters of the book, I said, I've had other leaders, I tell people, you have to be. One of the things, if you choose to step into the leadership arena, you have to choose to be somewhat vulnerable. And people, well, what do you mean? I said, listen, you have to develop trust with your people, communication, all those good things. And I had people say, I don't want to get close to my people. I said, well, why not? Why don't you want to get? I don't get that. Why don't? Well, you know, you need to. I had actually a very seasoned executive tell me this years ago. We were polar opposites when it came to leading people. He said, you know, you should make sure you keep people at a distance and off balance. I almost fell down to the floor. I said, what? He said, you got to keep people at a distance and off balance. I said, at a distance and off balance? He goes, yeah. He says, because if they get too close, you know, familiarity breeds contempt and everything. And I shook my head and walked away. And I go, my gosh, man, how do you develop trust? If you can't develop trust, what kind of relationship do you have? And here's the deal. When you walk into that leadership arena, when you start to get to know, you become vulnerable because some people try to fool you right away. And so, yeah, you could initially be fooled about someone's character or their work ethic initially. That comes with it. Can't be worried about that. But once you identify it, those are just temporary. I tell people all the time, people can't hide their characters forever. You know, and you usually get a good idea being in the arena for a while, you know what guys and gals are actually on the mark and who aren't. But you can't be afraid of it. You got to develop a relationship with some people. You got to be able to communicate. If you don't develop a relationship, how are you able to get to know them? And if you don't get to know them, how do you develop trust? And if you can't develop trust in a relationship, what does your organization really look like? What's the climate? Mm. What's the culture in there? Again, this is not up with people. You know, because you got to hold people accountable. You know, when stuff happens. But I'll give you another one. What about the guy and girl, Tom? What about that who because of their own right, because of their own reasons or because of their own shortcomings, they self-implode because it's their fault. I mean, we've all seen it, right? The guy lights a stick of dynamite, holds on to it, and implodes. He knows he's doing wrong and everything else, and now he's a mess. You know what then? And I tell a story in my book about one such guy who had a lot of us fooled, and he literally, you know, self-imploded. He woke up one morning, I'm walking into the office, and one of my guys says to me, I was running the office in Dallas before I got pulled up to D.C., and he said, hey, this so-and-so, I got bad news. His wife threw him out last night. I go, what happened? Apparently, he's been living with some demons and stuff and couldn't hold on to it, confessed to his wife, and, you know, she threw him out on the front lawn with everything included, you know, typical, everything included. So now what, you know? So now what? I said, now what? Okay, what do we do, you know? One of the things that the guy was worried about was, well, maybe he did some things inappropriate in the office, and maybe we should send something up to our internal affairs people. And I'm sitting there disappointed because I know who the guy is, right? I thought I knew who he was, and a whole new version of him came out. But the idea wasn't, okay, we're going to now throw lighter fluid on him and burn him up. I said, okay, how do we help him somewhat? I mean, how do we – so knowing what the guy's faith was, we had a chaplain's program. We did some things to mitigate the best we could. And why do you do that? Because he's a human being. Because he's ours. He turned a gun on himself, so to speak. Yeah, I know. But no. At the end of the day, he's ours. We have a relationship with this guy. Yes, he made the mistake. Yes, it's his fault. But that's about doing the right thing. No, we're not gonna pour gasoline on a guy and torture him because he did it himself. That's just wrong. It's wrong to do that. You know, it's the whole thing about, you know, maybe every now and then all of us need a second chance. So it doesn't always happen. That's what I mean. You pay a price to lead. You know, you really do. Now the guy, listen. Even when you care about people, Tom, even when you love them, even when you hurt for them, even when you do, that doesn't mean suddenly because when something happens they're going to be whole again. You know what I mean? That's this gig. There's no sometimes Disney story about when some things happen. Like with this particular guy, we did our best to help him out. We got some chaplain support. We got him some spiritual and physical assistance, and he's still broken, man. He's still broken. But one of the things when I left here to move on to D.C., I got this one line from him, and he just said, I'll never forget what you all did for me. He's still broken. You know what I mean? He's still, you know, me personally pray for the guy and everything else, you know. But never forget. And then the other thing is it quietly validates what the men and women in the workplace get a little glimpse of, is that, wait a minute, when things are at their very worst, you know, we can be at our very best. And you know, the profit, the mission and all that goes by the wayside when those types of things happen, you know, when life suddenly kicks in your door. You know, so that's why I said it's a walk, you know, really is is there are no three easy steps to being a great leader. There are no seven great steps. You've got to be willing to be in there. You've got to have a relationship with people. You got to learn how to love people. You can't be fearful of making some mistakes. And I don't mean in our line of work, in our profession. I tell guys we cannot make a tactical error on the street because people get killed. But when you're leading people, you're gonna make mistakes. You know, some of them sometimes are innocent. Others you realize, maybe I was too hard, or maybe I was too soft. Maybe you should have acted quicker. You're constantly learning. And that's why I tell people it's good always to find. I tell young men and even not so young men and women, find somebody, a mentor. And somebody maybe a little bit who's been around a little bit longer, who's been in this position, that you can talk to and share to. Or I tell other leaders, you need to be mentors to other men and women up there who you can push along the way. You know, when they really screw up, they can sit there and go, "Man, I messed this one up," and you can help them through it. It's part of our responsibility.
Yeah, it is a powerful responsibility. I was a manager for a big management consulting company, and I didn't always like it. Managing people is not always fun. So many people aim to be a manager, but then when you manage people who you're also friends with, boy, it can be tough. It can be tough. Challenging,
And I'm being nice about it. Early on in the book, I talked about I really couldn't wait to be a supervisor. I was always driven. I loved my job. I loved my profession. Loved everything about it. And I had an old supervisor who looked at me because he knew I was excited about it. You know, and I was excited for all what I would consider the right reasons. You know, I'm like, okay, man, we're going to get together. I'm going to love them. They're going to love me. And we're going to storm the gates of hell. And this is what we're going to do. And, you know, one of those really I've always been kind of that way. And he looks at me and this guy goes, "Hey, Capper," he goes, you know what? He says, you know what your biggest problem is? Now, mind you, somebody's looking at me saying, "You know what your biggest problem is?" And I'm thinking, "Hey, I'm Jimmy Capper. I don't have a problem." And he goes, "You think everybody thinks the way you do." And I'll never forget that. He says, "You think everybody thinks the way you do about the job, about the profession." And, of course, I did think that because from where I was standing, you know, I wasn't I was kind of in an informal, you know, leadership position, but, you know, you see everybody kind of the same, and you don't see that at the time when you're working in a unit that maybe other guys and gals maybe not so productive than you are or a little bit differently. But once you start leading people, all of a sudden it's about everybody else, and you start going, "Oh, wait a minute." And within the first few weeks of as being a brand new supervisor, I have the inspection manual open, the administrative manual, a manual I didn't know existed, and I'm thinking to myself, nobody told me about this part of it. Nobody. I had a person who didn't like coming to work, and I'm like, how can this be? How can this person not like coming to work? So you wade into that arena, and you go, wow. You know, you got, man, there's a lot to learn. So.
What is your website, James? We haven't directed people to it yet, and I got to get better at that earlier in the show. But what is the best website place for people to get hold of you?
I have a website that we're in the process of. It's up, and we're going to be putting up a new website. But it's frontlineleadershipgroup.com. Frontlineleadershipgroup.com is the website, and we're in the process of doing that. You know, I retired in August. And, you know, we had been praying hard about this next journey, and I was fortunate that I was able to write a book about my walk, and, you know, we really believe that this is where we're supposed to be. And I said, I really believe that we have something to offer people about, you know, the reality of being a leader, which can be a lot of fun, but it is, you know, you pay a price. And so we started this little company, and I call it a leadership development firm, but really it's what I do a lot of is do a lot of keynote speaking, get out and talking to people. I've been doing it for years while I was on active duty, and it was great. So you get a call and said, you know, when I started talking to men and women on our, you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago about, you know, some basic principles, and I call it people, purpose, and passion, and talking to them about the heart of leadership, I never expected it to take off the way it did. And I have a tendency to kind of get excited when I talk, and my New York gets up, and I start moving around, and my hands start waving. And so I started to talk to my guys and gals who were leaders, and the next thing I get a phone call, say, hey, would you mind talking to over here and over there? The next thing you know, I'm talking at the National Academy, and I'm talking at different places around the country. And then, you know, because I ran offices overseas, I got the opportunity to travel overseas and talk in a bunch of major conferences and stuff. And some of it has to do with national security, but ultimately it comes down to I talk to men and women about the calling to lead men and women and what that means, man. It's not just I'm the boss and you're going to do stuff. You're the leader, and you have to be a servant first. And that's what gets people.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have to be willing to serve. Go, whoa, wait a minute, where did this come from? So listen, dude, you have to be willing to serve those first. You're not the guy sitting up on a big chair high above everybody. You're the guy down below pushing people, getting them excited about people, stirring those gifts up in people, getting them excited about who we are, what's our purpose. You know, I would every morning when I was in Washington, D.C., as operations chief, every morning we had a global operations meeting, and I'm surrounded by some of the brightest, talented, dedicated, and bravest. What some of these guys have done, and anything I've done, has paled in comparison. Spectacular guys, and invariably, at least once or twice a month, you know, we get ready to talk about things that are happening all over the globe and stop everybody. And I would start with this: don't ever forget who we are. Don't ever forget who we are. Don't ever forget who we are as first of all as public servants. That people outside of this are looking to us that we're gonna make a difference in their communities. You know, don't forget who we are as men and women of honor and character and integrity. And you constantly, by the way, these are other senior executives, right? So it's not just to the young guys, man. It's this constant push for excellence. Remind people who we are, what our purpose is. You know, people are counting on us. Our organization are counting on us. Our country's counting on us. You know, that we're going to pursue these things with excellence. People should look at us and say, that's what good government looks like. And I tell people in other organizations, you do the same, man. I don't care if your company makes widgets. Hey, listen, we make the best widgets going because it's a great product. It provides a service, and people are looking for good products that will make a difference in their lives. And that's not up with people, man. That's about pursuing excellence and driving people to get better about themselves both professionally and personally. Man, that's powerful. It catches on. It's contagious. But again, not everybody gets it, you know? Not everybody, I'd be lying and say, yes, everybody gets, no, not everybody gets it. And so you got to cut
right.
That stuff.
Amazing, amazing. We could go on for a long time. This is exciting, and I bet you have some amazingly cool stories.
Involving
bullets and some involving battles.
There's a couple of things in the because a lot of people say, well, do you talk about war stories? And there are a couple of stories in the book that I put in there just really to highlight the importance of good leadership. There's a couple of things in there that kind of define that, and it gives the reader outside saying, wow, this is the kind of stuff that these guys are involved in. But listen, Tom, let me leave you with this, and I know you got to go. It's not just for not just for these warrior careers. It's the things that I talk about cut across from public service to nonprofits to for profits. If you have an organization, if you have, whether it's, you know, two people or 10,000 people, you know, to develop leaders who care about their people first, who are technically competent in their area of line of work and their profession, and to understand that when you start to care about those people, that you are entrusted to, they're entrusted to us, that you can make a difference in your organization. And if you do that and you're willing to step out and do that and be willing, you know, to be a little vulnerable, I'm telling you, your company, your organization, whatever it is, will flourish. But it doesn't happen overnight. And I tell people in the in the book, I talk about I wanted things to happen like right away. It takes a little time. It takes a little time to build that culture, you know, and people are looking at you. They're kind of saying, is this guy for real? Does he mean this, or is he just another guy that's passing through? And then what you want to leave ultimately is a legacy. You want people to learn from that. And I tell people, I want them to be better at it than I was. Why? It's like my kids. Same thing with my family. I want my kids to be better at this life thing, better at being a parent, better being a better Christian than I was. I want them, my heart is for them to be better at it because they can change their families and they can change and impact, you know, their job. They can change and impact their life. So, you know, that's just a snapshot of me, brother.
Whoa. It is obvious this is something you are enormously passionate about. I would even get into after this if we had more time, but like life now, like nobody's shooting at you. You're not undercover anywhere. You're not in some foreign country all the time. A different life, I'm sure, but very, very cool. I'm looking forward to reading the book myself. Thank you so much for your time today, James. Thank you for your public service. Public servants are servants of the public, and you put in enough years of that, no different than military duty, anything else. Thank you, thank you. Public service is a service to the public, and you did that well for many years. So thank you for that. Looking forward to reading your book and learning some of your ideas on leadership. Very, very interesting and intriguing. Thank you so much for being with me today, Jimmy.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Tom. I'm really am honored to be on your show. God bless you, man. It means a lot to me that you'd be willing to have me on. Thank you so much.
Have an amazing day. Take care.
Thanks, brother. Bye-bye.